It's time for Conversations with MIT Medical, care for the community. Here's your host, Melanie Cole.
Welcome to Conversations with MIT Medical. I'm Melanie Cole, and today we're exploring cognitive behavioral strategies and how they can be used to help us reduce our stress levels during the COVID-19 pandemic. Joining me is Dr. Maryam Kodadoust. She's a psychologist at MIT Medical Student Mental Health and Counseling Services. Dr. Kodadoust, thank you so much for joining us today in this unprecedented times. Tell us a little bit about cognitive behavioral therapy and why it's a useful therapeutic tool to reduce stress and anxiety for students at MIT and in the community when they're in a high-pressure environment anyway, and this is adding to that.
Well, thanks for having me on the show, Melanie. I can tell you that CBT stands for Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, and it's a kind of evidence-based targeted counseling where you're focused on the here and now and on the relationship between your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors and how they influence one another. So it makes CBT really super useful in reducing stress and anxiety because it offers immediate techniques of changing how we think or behave to impact how we feel and vice versa. So I'll give you an example. We're familiar with sort of the mind and body connection, the idea that when we feel stressed, we tend to have a feeling of tension in our body, right? But did you know that it also goes the other way around? So when you feel tension in your body, it actually produces tense feelings or stressful feelings. So one technique folks might be familiar with is the progressive muscle relaxation. This is a behavioral technique where you move from one muscle group to another, tightening and releasing those muscles several times until you release the tension in the muscle groups. And in the process, your body ends up sending signals to your brain that you're, in fact, relaxed, and people often feel better afterwards.
Fascinating. It really is. I've always been so interested in this type of therapy. So before we get into some more of it, what's the relationship, doctor, between our thoughts, feelings, and our behaviors? You just mentioned that we can feel tense and thereby thinking tense thoughts and vice versa. But how does the way we think about something change our feelings about it?
That's a great question. Our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are all connected and influencing one another. For example, if we feel sad or depressed, we know we're more likely to have sad or depressing thoughts, and we're more likely to partake in sad or depressed behaviors like staying in bed all day or not changing our clothes or not taking care of ourselves. I'd like to highlight the relationship between our thoughts and feelings because I find MIT students who rely on their analytical thinking buy into every thought they have as truth. And, well, truth is that many of our thoughts are prone to emotional filters and distortions. And what I mean by distortion is a thinking error produced by an inaccurate lens or a way of looking at something. So here's an example. How I feel about receiving a B in physics is more determined by my thoughts about it than the actual grade. If I get a B in physics and I have the thought, well, it was a hard class and I'm glad I didn't get a worse grade, I might actually feel some relief. But if I have the thought that anything less than an A may as well be a failure, I'm going to feel just awful. So I want to point out that the latter thinking is associated with a particular kind of cognitive distortion, and it's called the all-or-nothing thinking, where, as the label suggests, we think in sharp contrasts with very little shades of gray. You know, imagine if everything is either good or bad, success or failure, how much that kind of distortion dramatizes our everyday experience and increases our stress.
Wow, that is just so interesting. Then, if many situations seem to be black and white now, really life and death situations, and we have some pretty extreme things going on to protect ourselves, how can we judge what's the true way to see something versus a distortion that you were just discussing?
The first thing, I think, the first way to judge is to be aware of your feeling, knowing that your feelings impact the way that you see something as much as how you see something might impact your feelings. And I'll give you an example. If, say, I'm feeling sort of anxious, and, you know, there's a lot of reason to be anxious because of the pandemic and feeling isolated and not knowing what the future holds. And I'm getting online to feel connected and to get some information. If I know that I'm aware of my anxious feelings, then I might notice that I'm prone to interpret things in more anxiety-provoking way, or that I'm more attracted to stories that sort of invoke or reinforce that feeling. And this is a common phenomenon. It's called state-based cognition, where how we feel tends to inform how we think. If I'm anxious, I'm going to tend to have anxious thoughts. I'm going to have more access to anxious thoughts, and I'm going to filter out any information in the environment that matches and choose the ones that matches my internal state, so anxiety being the one. So I'm going to be attracted to sources of information that might be more anxiety provoking. If I'm talking with friends and there are some innocuous comments that are shared, I might have a more anxiety provoking interpretation of it. And that might actually make my feelings worse. So what do I say? I say, first and foremost, be aware of how you feel before you get online and choose, first of all, a source of information that's reliable and that isn't emotionally latent. So the World Health Organization, NIH, CDC, and your local state or city sites for more specific rules and recommendations on how to keep safe. And I believe we have a link on MIT's homepage that directs students to MIT's latest response on COVID-19. Second, I recommend that when you are going online to connect, that just being aware that if you're feeling anxious, you're being attracted to stories that are also anxiety provoking, that you stop. You're mindful of it and you stop. And you use that information because, remember, it works the other way too. So if you're anxious and you want to change that mood, maybe getting yourself to watch some funny videos or partaking in dialogue that's fun and feeling that exudes sort of feelings of connectedness and warmth. And finally, what I want to say is that you not make any major decision when you're in the midst of a strong feeling state. Because whether it's assessing the viability of your current living situation or your academic course or a relationship, give yourself time to assess the evidence and pros and cons during different feeling states so that you have access to materials that line up with all those different feeling states. I've heard so many times students saying, you know, I was so frustrated with my boyfriend or girlfriend or partner because they, again, frustrated me. And this was the millionth time I was frustrated with them. And I, you know, I realized that they've never been there for me. You know, I couldn't recall the time they were there for me. Only to then several weeks later hear from the student that, you know, once their frustrations had reduced, they remembered all the wonderful things about their partner. Oh, you know, there are times they're there for me, and there are many times that they recognize that something they did was frustrating and changed it, right? So waiting until you have experienced either less intense feelings or a variety of feelings under which you look at the evidence might be more useful way of looking at something.
That was a great explanation. And with the MIT community, as we said, in these unprecedented times, and they're under extreme pressure anyway, because they're at MIT, What do you want this community to know about utilizing CBT to help them at this time? What you can do for them, and when you feel it's important that they look to cognitive behavioral therapy strategies to help them not only get through the pressures of being an MIT student, but really the pressures of COVID and the time we're living in.
So what I would like the MIT students to know is this. We've all experienced those times when we're down, we're tired, we're irritated, we're scared. And I want you to recognize that just as much as times exist, there are also other times that you might not have access to. Times that you have felt joy and love and connection and security. And that when you're stuck in this one particular feeling that may be really stuck with you, I want you to know that there are ways that you can give yourself permission to behave in a way that you would if you felt better, and not to wait for that, or to reach out for support and help. So I'd like students to know that just as much as you might be feeling scared or tired or irritated or hopeless right now, that there are times that you have felt happiness and joy and connected and safety, and that those feelings are there waiting to be had. And if you don't have access to them right now, or you don't know how to get access to them, do not hesitate to reach out to us at MIT Medical's Student Mental Health and Counseling Services, and we would be happy to help you by sharing strategies that might help you get unstuck when you're feeling stressed.
It's great information. It's so important at this time, Dr. Cota-Doost, but really all the time. And it's great information that we can all use. Thank you again for joining us. For more information on Student Mental Health and Counseling Services at MIT Medical, please visit our website at medical.mit.edu. That concludes this episode of Conversations with MIT Medical. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast and all the other MIT Medical podcasts. For more health tips and updates, please follow us on your social channels. I'm Melanie Cole.